I want to talk to you about the future. The future. There probably shouldn't be a tape recording of this. Because it is, to a large degree, confidential. To a very large degree, revolutionary. To an extreme degree, slanderous. Libelous. But I'll claim it was all dubbed in on the tape. It may not have occurred to you in the last week or so that there was any future. We have had several national catastrophes of one kind and another, including the election of a president. And we have had a couple of wars. But most important, we have had some international policy outlined which puts us in an interesting position. We, as Scientologists, an interesting position indeed. Probably the most important of these is the insistence upon peace. We have a condition in the world now known as peace without communication. Naturally, that's impossible, which I suppose is why it's the policy. You could only have peace in the presence of broad, intelligent communication with plenty of figure-figure on the lines and lots of weight. If you just get everybody talking hard enough about their difficulties along enough comm lines with enough commissions, undoubtedly you would have peace. But you can't keep chopping things off and say that peace will prevail. It takes a lot of communication to keep the peace. A nation exists in the world today. The Soviet states, or whatever they call themselves, I forget. It's a bunch of small countries that got together and decided to pack a big stick named Stalin. Well, he died. He was holding them together very neatly, and they started to fall apart. And the first person that objected was the person who was returned to office in the United States. I consider this quite remarkable. After every great ruler, by which is meant a cruel, tyrannical beast, the Russian nation has fallen apart within the succeeding 10 or 15 years. The Russian nation has been a nation many times, and each time has reduced itself to principalities as soon as the wielder of the big stick was dead. History is so repetitively redundant that it begins to look like duplication, and who in a State Department could duplicate? The Russian nation is again doing this same trick. It is busy falling to pieces. First, there went Poland. Then, there went Hungary. And for some reason or other, somebody at the last moment decided that Hungary, in the Kremlin, they decided that Hungary would have to be assaulted and, quote, put back together again as a red satellite, which they succeeded in doing with such bad press and publicity that now the word communist is becoming a curse word in Europe. They're doing a wonderful job of disintegration. None better. Gorgeous job. There went Poland, there went Hungary, Now, because of their savageness of attack on Hungary, refugees rushing out of Hungary into other nations can be counted upon to stir up revolutionary activities there. And here we go. The Russian nation has always went just this way. I wish to God somebody could read history and find out that this is the case and just leave it alone and stop talking to them to quit. I don't want them to quit. I want them to fall apart. There's a difference. Left alone, in my humble opinion, talked to pleasantly, ignored as to all the bad things they're doing, patted on the head at proper intervals, big commissions arranged to discuss the peace, more communication lines, millions for cables, but not a penny for tanks. The Russian nation would just go, brrr, blob. But no, we've got to reprimand them. We must give them an external enemy, observably an enemy, so that they can reunite in the face of this great external force which threatens them. It's too bad. I expect any moment hero medals, 1 quart or 2 quarts of hero medals to arrive over here in Washington. About the only way you'd keep it together is give it an external menace and start rapping it on the knuckles and reminding it that it's a nation. It's almost forgotten. Here's a singular bad piece of policy because it means war. But war is something that cannot be fought in the world today. It can't be fought because there is a weapon, quote unquote, which is not a weapon, underscore. And that weapon is the atomic arsenal, the atomic missiles, the H-bomb, the Q-bomb, the buzz bomb, whatever we want to call these bombs. They'll have a new name for them next week. Atomic fission or fusion is not usable in war. Just as you would not issue rifles to your troops, which would blow off their breech blocks in every private space, so you would not engage war with an atomic missile. When you fire one of these missiles, it backfires. Now, it's all right for them to play around with these things and make reactors and install them in submarines so that you can give a big contract to some electrical company and get kickback in spite of the fact the submarine doesn't work. You can do all kinds of interesting things if you want to with atomic fission. There are lots of progressive activities that could be engaged in, but not amongst them is a weapon. It's not a weapon, any more than poison gas is a good weapon. It's not a good weapon. It's only a good weapon against civilians crowded on roads where your troops are not scheduled to advance. Then poison gas gets to be a pretty good weapon. But not fission. Fission is a bad weapon because it isn't a weapon and pretends to be a weapon. If you threw enough atom bombs at this moment at Russia to paralyze Russia, it's a hideous fact that the atmosphere of Earth would become so polluted that the citizens of the United States would not thereafter be able to survive in any condition of health. And if Russia bombed the United States with not a moment thought of any retaliation, the Russian citizen would be in like condition. What kind of a weapon is this? It's not a weapon at all. Just why we have to have an H-bomb testing program is a little bit difficult to establish. since I was convinced a long time ago that bombs would go off. I'm sure you've gotten this idea too. And that is about all there is to find out. That is found out. Bombs go off. Well, you don't have to keep shooting bombs off to make sure that bombs go off. We all know that bombs go off. There must be some lingering doubt in the atomic physicist's mind concerning this point. Maybe he's surprised every time when they explode. Fascinating. They talk about bomb testing programs. Well, it'd be one thing if mankind was trying to find out if he could make fission fish. That'd be one thing. But not only would the United States have to carry along this whole program of exploding enough bombs to finally convince their atomic physicists that bombs go off, but now England has got to explode enough bombs to make sure that bombs go off and satisfy their physicists. And then Russia has got to explode enough bombs to make sure that bombs go off and satisfy their Atomic Energy Commission. And I suppose by that time France will have discovered the formula. But long before Russia will have completed the same series embarked upon by the United States, the air will already have become sufficiently poisoned that people will not be able to stay at work. This is a fantastic fact. Just who is kidding who, Lord knows. But the Public Health Department of the United States is at this time debarred from further inspection of atomic radiation pollution in the air. The governor of the state of New York has been forbidden to permit any further monitoring of the air in the vicinity of New York. He can't find out if it's radioactive anymore. And this is a fabulous state of affairs. Well, I didn't know it was personal. I didn't know that we Scientologists had the stake in this that we had in it until a very short time ago. It was all right to say that one or more elements of the A-bomb were poisoning the atmosphere and were affecting people's health. That was one thing. But nobody really has been close enough to these bombs to really be affected by them, of course, except the population of Earth. You didn't have to be near one of these bombs. Some people are more sensitive than others because some people have been X-rayed more often than others. Some people have been subjected to radiation in other ways, such as television. Television spits out enough gamma to make you spit out your teeth, truth be known. It takes years of sitting in front of a TV set to spit your teeth out. But if you talk to them seriously and say, "Now, boys, what are you doing?" The way you sneak up on these guys is very funny. You say, "Television actually emits radiation." And they say, "Oh." You don't want to approach it that way. See, that gives them an out. Doesn't surprise them. You say, "What are you boys doing now about the gamma radiation from TV tubes?" And they say, "Well, matter of fact, we're getting there. We've got it pretty well licked. We're going to try lead glass on the front of the..." "What am I talking to you for?" This is quite amusing. It's such a tiny quantity that by itself, it probably would never seriously affect anybody's health. Probably the entertainment itself would be more effective in destroying. But the funny part of it is that it is there. And it does add to the already existing gamma-type radiation and particles in the air at this time. Now, down in Arizona, they put an H-bomb 9 feet below the ground and blew it up. Why? To find out if it had left dust? Well, it certainly did. It had the entire Southwest counting so that anybody who wanted to go uranium mining was in a delirium of happiness over the tremendous number of mines he discovered. They were under every piano and back of every bar. Everybody and everything in Arizona counted after that. He took a Geiger counter and he'd go, brrr, well, gorgeous. Guys went around in a delirium of happiness before they suddenly realized this, saying, brrr, I got a mine, brrr, I got a mine, brrr, I got a mine, brrr. Hey, that's me. Now, wherever we go on Earth, then, we're going to encounter air or space which contains radiation at a considerable count. It is not really, at this point, where it would be noticed completely by the individual. It is right on the threshold of that. Just exactly what this had to do with last week's activities, I would not be able to guess. But people under a bombardment of radiation start to go downtown. They start on downtown. Now, all of this has a considerable bearing on us. We are, at this time at least, citizens of Earth. We do have a playing field. There's quite one thing to confront a playing field being blown up, bang, and that's all there is to it, you know. But some chap wrote a poem one time, and he says, the world won't end with a bang, the world will end with a whimper. And evidently, that is the case. The threat of war will probably culminate in no war, but it will catalyze various nations to reassure their physicists by exploding bombs. And the more bombs that are exploded, the more atmosphere saturation there will be. And I don't know that they will stop it, because at a certain point, sane reaction is not noticeable. You can get just so much radiation in the air, and after that, you do not get sane, rational reactions. You get reactions only. I'm not backing up the hearse to you. The only reason I'm talking to you about it is because we can do something about it. We can do several things about it. We find this intimate at this time because we believe, to some degree, that we have evidence which tends to point in the direction that this condition has been going forward for about 9 years. All right, if this is the case, has it had any bearing on what we've been doing in Dianetics and Scientology? Evidently it has. The reactions of cases at large between 1947 and 1956, carefully reviewed now, does appear to have altered. How? In 1947, it was very easy to run an engram. Even in early 1950, it was still fairly easy to run an engram, but it was a little harder. By the end of 50, it was getting difficult to run engrams. In 1951, we had to beef up our processes like mad in order to run an engram cleanly. By 1952, we were beginning to run into nothing but whole track. 1953, we just had to look for other processes than engram running. We had to look hard, and we looked into exteriorization. In 54, in 55, and in 56, we have actually been researching further and further into more and more powerful techniques. Why? In 1947, the techniques we had were good enough. In 1950, spring of that year, they were practically good enough. Why haven't they stayed good enough? People haven't changed, have they? Not at all. We even see a difference of techniques which run 2 or 3 years ago don't work very well today. This fascinating panorama has just unfolded before my view as a distinct possibility, and it may or may not be true, but it is certainly a distinct possibility, and there is a coordination here between the amount of radiation in the atmosphere and the difficulty of auditing a preclaire. So I started to look forward a little bit further, and I found out something quite interesting. An individual who has an invisible particle nipping at the body reacts. He doesn't know what it is. It is a hidden influence. It is a hidden menace of some sort or another. So what's he do? He tries to fill up the space around him. What's he got to fill it up with? A bank. He starts pulling in a bank to fill up the space. He starts inspecting things, saying, is that it? Is that it? Is that it? Is that it? Is it my Aunt Chloe? No. And all the time, it's an invisible particle which has a reaction against the body, which makes the body ambitiousless and ill. Wow. What would this do to auditing? If between 1947 and 1956, we had a progressive pollution of the atmosphere which caused people to do this more and more and more and made auditing rougher and rougher and rougher. This would be a fantastic thing for an auditor to confront, wouldn't it? That would be a very interesting thing to be looking at and not knowing you were looking at it. It'd be demanded of you in any given month that you run more arduously than you did the month before. To some slight degree, you would have to be more on the ball with a preclear. You would have to do more and cause more and be more alert, and you'd have to be better and better and better. Your techniques would have to be better and better and better to produce more or less the same result. Now, the question is, has that happened? It is not necessarily true. But it's a strange thing that we have followed this exact course. According to the records which are lying around, people are harder to audit in general today than they were. And I don't care what people these are. Carpenter pulled off a project. Milkman, anybody. We don't care who it is. Health level. In order to get a full insight into this, one would actually have to inspect the Public Health Service records, if they are available, on various subjects between, let us say, 1920 and 1930 and 1945 and 1950. Would there be any difference in these records? What would be the prevalence of certain illnesses? Are there more illnesses today than there were then? Is the public health level lower now than it was then? Is there an incidence of insanity today much higher than then? And could we actually depend on these figures? It's not merely a press release by the APA to get in more appropriations. Is there any other supportive evidence? Well, all of this will have to be looked over and carefully weighed. But for the time being, we can hold the fort. We have processes that overreach the condition. We gained a bit, but we have something more important. We have a biochemical means of converting, evidently, this re-stimulative type of case into an easier to audit case. Now, I just say evidently we have that. I am not trying to press you with a great big stable datum that will maybe tomorrow become an unstable datum. I'm merely offering these things, and if they turn out to be true, they're true, and if they're not true, they're not true. That's all. But All sorts of random data comes through, data which has been a wild variable. You know, a good investigator, a good scientist, actually doesn't pay much attention to stable data. He doesn't look into the field of stable, raw data. He looks into the field of variable data. He looks into the field of wild variables to try to find out if there's anything there. Well, this has been a wild variable for me, and I've lived with and suffered with this phenomenon of worsening cases. That is to say, at any given instant, the cases presented to me to be audited were worse than the cases that had been presented. What was this dwindling spiral I was confronting? Wow! What's going on here? For a long time, I've suffered with this because figured out my observations completely wrong. What's going on here? Now, let me see. It took about so many hours, back about 48. Let me see. I'd run out so many n-grams. And only rarely would somebody present an early n-gram. It'd be mostly later stuff. And everybody I seemed to run into ran these things rather easily. 1950, started to run into some black cases that were harder to audit. Well, maybe they were around before, I'd say. Maybe we're running into a further strain of populace. Maybe the auditors I'm teaching just don't know how to audit at all, but I'd throw that aside because obviously they did. You see, all of this data weighing and coming along the line, one would be rather anxious if he'd had this much random data thrown at him, you see, to instantly throw in a good stable datum like blaming it all on radiation. We must resist that temptation. There's no sense in succumbing to it at all. Just continue to examine it. There might be something else entirely at fault here. Something else might be occurring. However, this one does seem to fill all characteristics. National health at this time is much poorer than it was. Service in the United States has fallen off in the last year very markedly. Only the people who were under the bombardment of atomic bombs in Phoenix, they were only 250 miles away, became ill in London after the discharge of Russian bombs. These boys and girls really became ill, by the way. I mean, very ill. Wham. Russia released some bombs that were almost total raw gamma. They didn't know how to get a bomb into an economical state at all, as far as gamma was concerned. And these bombs were quite deadly. And when they released them, there were a certain number of staff in London went down like tenpins. And I thought, well, somebody'd get sick. It's that season of the year. It's probably just flu. But nobody else got sick to any degree. And then we had a Congress. And these sick people were actually called upon to run the Congress, myself amongst them, by the way. We were actually called upon to run this Congress. And somehow or another, we stumbled through it. We got it done. We had it made, finally. But before the Congress, I was thinking neatly to myself, I really ought to call it off. Rather than expose a crowd of people, many of them strangers even to Scientology, an English Congress being different, rather than expose them to an obviously epidemic illness, I ran them on some processing that made them sick. You know, they went this way a little bit on a couple of the sessions. But by golly, they didn't get sick from what the staff had. Therefore, it required a little closer look. And that closer look showed us that it was only that staff which had been in Phoenix, which was now ill in London. It was an interesting thing to observe, wasn't it? Wasn't that an interesting thing to observe? Nobody else got sick. People were sniffling a little bit or something, but the people who were really sick, right down sick, and stayed sick for weeks, were the people in Phoenix who had been exposed to the Phoenix radiation. Now, you think of this atomic radiation as something that floats through the air with the greatest of ease, blown hither and yon by the winds of the world. Therefore, it requires a long time for it to arrive, and the distribution of these particles are entirely dependent upon being wafted hither and thither. They all have to do with fallout, which is being carefully watched. We used to just almost laugh ourselves hysterical in Phoenix. We don't understand why there is any public hysteria, because the fallout is being carefully watched. Nobody seemed to add up in the test grounds and so forth that we didn't care who was watching it. We cared what it was doing. By the way, there was an epidemic of measles, which was non-infectious measles, which broke out immediately after the most serious series of these. Measles, by the way, has an inoculation today which contains gamma. In other words, you can prevent measles with a little shot of gamma. It's quite interesting. Measles and gamma are quite closely connected. So are some other definite illnesses, most of which are respiratory illnesses, and all of which have to do with the cave-in of bones. Now, I didn't say infantile paralysis, did I? You didn't hear me say that, did I? Because the Infantile Paralysis Foundation makes a lot of money, and nobody must say anything about the Infantile Paralysis Foundation, and it's such a good thing that we have Salk vaccine, which only increased infantile paralysis 700 or 800%. I mean, it's a good thing to have around. Or did the Salk vaccine increase infantile paralysis in its weight across the country? Was it the fact that we had a president of the United States who suffered from infantile paralysis that popularized this with little children who weren't alive when he was ruling? You suppose this widespread popularity of infantile paralysis being a respiratory disease which attacks bone structure anything whatsoever to do with it? You don't suppose the sudden upsurge of this little-known disease covers exactly these years I'm talking about toughening cases? Oh, unfortunately, it does. Unfortunately, it does. Very definitely. Are there any other random data like this kicking around? Start checking people's health. Just stop them on the street and start checking their health. How well did you feel when? They give you fascinating data on it. Some young person's liable to tell you, well, I felt all right while I was in college, but I haven't been feeling well since. Getting out of college has upset me. Oh, yes? When did you get out of college? Oh, I got out of college in 48, and I've been well since. What's been wrong with you? Oh, nothing. I've just been tired. Oh, you've just been tired, huh? Nothing seriously wrong there. Oh, no. I take it easy. I get along all right. This isn't the type of public illness which runs at once to the doctor. Are there any other coordinated data? Now, I don't say these things all have to add up to fission. They might add up to Martian rays being played against Earth, as far as that's concerned. But they certainly are a number of data to stand totally isolated, aren't they? What is this all about? Why is it that when we audit people, we occasionally discover, if they were ever out to Phoenix and worked in the Phoenix organizations, that they have stuck views of Phoenix. Non-significant views, they're just standing looking down a street in Phoenix. There's nothing engramic about that whatsoever. We've never had anybody get stuck in this kind of an engram before, quietly walking down the street. And that is an engram. They run like engrams. What is this all about? Well, a number of data adding up is enough for us to take precautionary steps. That's all the data adds up to. enough for us to take precautionary steps and to study the situation further. And you have every reason to have the information that we are doing just that. We are not suddenly taking off into the blue from a stable datum that everybody is poisoned to pieces by atomic fission. I don't know what the Roentgen count has to be in the atmosphere in order to actually make somebody ill. I do not know this. Unlike many of our learned fellow men, we in Scientology do not use human beings on a vivisection basis. We're not accustomed to doing that. So we haven't exposed people to radiation just to find out how they felt. We haven't stood them up and given them a good solid bath of gamma so as to find out if they died or not. We leave that up to Hitler or to the APA or to the Atomic Energy Commission. We leave that up to the paratrooper division during the war. We let paratroopers walk through the Mojave Desert without water to find out how far they could go before they fell down and died. I mean, we have a different standard of things, which is above the animal standard. So all we can do is to use our reason on the thing, investigate the evidence presented, and if it fits, all right. And if it doesn't fit, okay, we'll find something else. But we are taking precautionary steps. And at this time, based on what we learned of what we used to call guck back in the old days, Finite Scientology is well old enough now to have the old days. We recalled that some odd manifestations occurred when nicotinic acid was delivered to individuals. Very peculiar. Nicotinic acid is advertised in the pharmacopoeia as turning on a flush. It says so. It says it's toxic. But it's a funny flush, isn't it, that in 1950 displayed nothing but bathing suit patterns on the body. I never saw such neat flushes. They were very neat. And it was very peculiar, if this stuff was toxic, how an overdose of it eventually turned on no flush at all. And the more you overdosed it, the sooner you didn't get any more flushes from it. Now, we flattened several cases in those days so that they didn't have any more sunburns to run out, and they felt pretty good. I remembered this suddenly, 3 weeks ago, something on that order, and I said, do you know that sun that sits up there and goes wog wog, you know, that everybody says rah to? Well, the sun up there is pure fission. No better example can anywhere be found than sun. Oh, what is sunburn? Now, wait a minute. If nicotinic acid would run out sunburn, which is fission of a sort, would it run out radiation? Well, you know me. When I go out to test something, I test it. I go find somebody like breeding. Well, actually, the kids around are terrific. They're absolutely terrific. If I use myself on an experiment, I practically get shot. Everybody argues with me. I'm not supposed to have this particular type of martyred glory. I received more phone calls from London from madder people because I hadn't tested radiation on them when I got sick last February on some tests on this. She were mad. So anyhow, Don came up and immediately volunteered to start throwing nicotinic acid down the throat at a mad rate. Well, within a day or two, he had all our hair standing on it. Well, I thought he'd go at it conservatively, you know, he'd take 50 milligrams every day or something like this, or 100 or something like this. So he started taking, I don't know, 100 on the hour, every hour, or every 3 hours he doubled the dose or something like this. And he went and looked it up, and he even took the new form of it. There's a new form called niacinamide. And it does everything it says in the form that nicotinic acid does, but does it better, you know, without the side effects. It's an absolute dud. It's completely nil. I mean, it doesn't do anything. How it bears any relationship to nicotinic acid, I wouldn't know. But it evidently does, according to the pharmacopoeia. So it's just old-time nicotinic acid. Well, he started throwing this down his throat at a mad rate, and he turned purple and pink and started scratching and itching, and people could toast marshmallows on him there for a while. And so on, it started to run a little bit flatter, and started some other people on this. More people began taking it. But what do you know? What do you know? The stuff doesn't now run out sunburn. It run out some sunburn. There are some sunburns that it turns on, but it's now running where people don't wear bathing suits. It's running where people have themselves beautifully neat and decent, as well as where they don't. Fantastic. They run all over. The most interesting prickly sensation you ever wanted to feel. They turn on hives and red flushes and prickly sensations, and their faces get it most often. Wonder why that is. Face is exposed all the time. Of course, the face gets sunburned more often. But how about a case that had all the sunburn run out by nicotinic acid in 1950, and for years afterwards, totally null on the subject? Starts to run out face blushes, all with Vizios of Phoenix. Must have been facing in some direction when something flashed. Got it? I don't even tell you now that nicotinic acid runs out. Radiation. But it's running out more than it ran out in 1950, and that's for sure. Of course, there are people around that start to take it who believe it runs out nothing. It just puts them into complete torture, and that's that. And it's just a new mechanism of accomplishing this thing. Made you sure that this is just a new inquisition they have just run into, where they are being burned alive without even the benefit of a snake. But here's what's peculiar. Pieces of engrams that didn't run before, odds and ends of track of the last few years and so on, start to go out on this stuff. Now, I didn't do too much research on this because I don't believe much of the data on which existing information is based. You have to be very careful in the field of research where you go for sources. Sources must be reliable. And you get a bunch of sources that are under confidential classification or secret classification and this and that. And you take the odds and ends and scraps which are escaping out from underneath this basket, this bushel which is hiding the light, and you often don't get the complete straight story. So I haven't paid too much attention to these various things, but we found out quite independently that the administration of dicalcium phosphate, the administration of B-complex, and the administration of ascorbic acid are all actually necessary to the administration of nicotinic acid. One of the first data that turns up on a little research on this demonstrates that something they're calling, I don't know, they'll call it something else tomorrow, they're calling it now strontium 90, actually replaces calcium in the bone structure. Fascinating. We found out that it was a necessary adjunct some time ago. All right, if it's a necessary adjunct, how come strontium 90 also does it? Now, I didn't know positively how this whole problem went together. I don't know how this problem goes together exactly beyond this fact. An individual seems to throw into re-stimulation engrams to reassure himself when he is being hit by a hidden menace, which he cannot see. Then he gets something he can see. A thetan is having something happen to his body that he himself does not experience. The thetan doesn't experience it. The body, more or less, gets the reaction and gets the experience of being bombarded by gamma or other things such as strontium 90. All right, the body being bombarded, that it is being bombarded, is out of the ken of the thetan. He knows he has not been around any atomic energy plants or anything of the sort. He doesn't suspect the possibility that the entire ionosphere flashes every time one of these bombs go off and that everybody on Earth gets a 360-degree flash. Don't you see? The entire thing goes flash. Very possibly this happens. We don't know that. But brother, do we know more than the guys who are monkeying with it? See, we're in college and they're in kindergarten as far as reactions and the history of this thing is concerned. We know, for instance, that every time gamma has appeared on a planet, no life on that planet has been the result, according to the experience, of the genetic entity line. An investigation with an electropsychometric testing and so forth demonstrates that the appearance of gamma is synonymous to the genetic entity for no more line. End of track. He stops growing, stops procreating, stops pushing on, because there hasn't been anything before which stopped this menace. And what do we find? We find that radiation directly affects procreation, the development of cells. It directly affects the procreative mechanisms. It hits straight at the second dynamic. Leukemia, non-production of bone cells, non-production of corpuscles, non-production of various body cells of one kind or another, stops. Now here we have then the mechanism of no further reproductive activity, end of track, this is it, boys, hit for the moon, go someplace else, because this planet is doomed. Now, we find that story on the track with an electropsychometer or in auditing a preclear or in running over and under on engrams. We find that this is what is part of the genetic entity blueprint. And that is why it has such a tremendous effect upon the body. The body goes at once to pieces. Says, why, who cares? How can I possibly go on? What's the reason to raise any children? What's the reason to do anything? Because this is end of track. Sooner or later, some madman's going to take this stuff and he's going to throw it around thoroughly enough, and that'll be that. Maybe none of these things go up with a bang, because I don't find any bangs on this end of track. I just find end of track. There isn't an atomic war there. Those worlds ended with a whimper. Well, is this one? Now, look. We know more about the mind. We know more about the track than man has known before. Maybe we know more than has been known for a lot of planets back. That doesn't mean that we couldn't know an awful lot more. It merely means that we know more than man in his ignorance knew. We could know a great deal more than we know right this minute. And part of that is that we can get a reaction between a vitamin compound and sunlight. We can get a rather violent reaction on a body on sunlight. But we probably can get a considerably profitable action between a vitamin compound and gamma and strontium 90 and the rest of these compounds. And we also have, underlying this, if we learn how to audit it, which I have been trying to find out for 10 solid months, how to get a person capable of actually having, without destructive consequences, these particular particles. Now, that would be the answer. That would be the answer. I've been looking for that answer for a long time now, almost killed myself in the process of the quest, but I haven't lost complete hope in doing that. By the way, I'll tell you something very amusing. We went off the whole line of it completely last February. Said, oh, to hell with it. Just threw in the sponge as far as this line of trying to proof up a body against being affected by all of these things. We just said, that's all. That's the end. I mean, devil with it. I mean, I blew my skull and that's that. So I said, let's see, what's the silliest line of processing that I could dream up? What is the silliest thing I could say that would remedy this situation of a quarrel with atomic fission? What's the silliest remedy? Well, that everybody could knock up a body adequately enough so that as fast as bodies got knocked off, you'd still have a body marked up that you could talk and walk and be seen with. That's pretty silly, you know. That's a good remedy. That's a thorough... I proceeded along that line of research, and everything we have learned for the past 10 months, tremendous things have fallen out of that hamper. How do you go about knocking up a body that everybody can see that you can use to talk with? And the more we go along that line, the more profitable and productive the answers have been. It looks like we can't go in any direction without winning. We go in any direction, we win something. Actually, of course, the actual goal of this is probably not at this time attainable because it would absolutely ruin the game. The game would just go poof. But nevertheless, trying to go in that direction has produced answers. All right, we have new answers and new activities in view. Undoubtedly, if we keep going along these processing lines, we will wind up with some sort of an answer to fission, handling it, and so forth. Now, we could go in two directions there. We could go in a governmental direction, which would consist of public appeal and so forth, or we could go in a research direction. And I'd just as soon go in both. Just as soon. If you find a bunch of idiots playing with a loaded cock 45, you have a tendency to want to take it away from them, you know? And I don't say that we want to take away the atom bomb or any part of that, but we do feel that no weapon should expose the population of Earth to annihilation long before it is employed. We feel this would be wrong. We feel somebody would have made a miscalculation. Therefore, we should do something to discourage these people a little bit, one way or the other. Now, in this other line of research, we have in it two divisions. One is mental, and the other is physical. And the funny part of it is that we probably are in possession of, at this moment, 85% of the answer on the physical approach. We call this compound dianazine after Dianetics. It is a compound. You do have to have the various parts of the compound to get a balanced dosage. We're learning more about it all the time. Wow, does it give an effect? I mean, that alone justifies its use. I am at this moment engaged in seeking to persuade any government agency that is in charge, because I find out now that the Atomic Energy Commission is no longer in charge of atomic energy. I think that's quite interesting. But any agency that's in charge of this sort of thing to send us some victims. Well, they're proud men. They'll send us some victims. That sends the fellows, well, look what we did. That frame of mind. They'll send us some people over that have been overexposed, that they know have been overexposed. And when we get our hands on them, brother, you could probably toast marshmallows on them, because we'll start slugging them up. Now, we do have some cases of known exposure, and where those cases of known exposure are met, we get much more violent reactions than we get with cases that have only been normally exposed to the atmospheric radiation, cases which have been assisted by lots of X-rays and other things, which contain, of course, gamma and so on, are peculiarly liable. All right, now, we're going to get a hold of these fellows, and we're going to shoot them full of dianazine. Some we will take a rational course of just a normal, natural dosage, and some we will slug up, and some we will underdose. This we will do for sure. And we will get more data on this subject, and we will learn a little bit more about it. We will balance up our ration a little bit more. We also have to get equipment that measures the amount of count in an individual, you know. So we point the equipment at him, and it goes brrrr, and measures the amount in there. And our next action will be compounding everything we know about a mental assist in this particular type of case. Now, if we are successful this far, and I don't think you will doubt that we could be successful that far. I mean, this is easy. We've already got all this already. We can always find somebody that's been irradiated. I can put an ad in the paper that simply says, people who have been overexposed to radiation should report to the foundation for examination. They'll turn up. All right, we'll get our series complete here and so forth, and then we'll start rolling up our sleeves. We'll take dianazine, which by that time will be unrecognizably complicated. It isn't, by the way, just nicotinic acid, that I assure you. It really isn't just nicotinic acid. We've already found out that it needs the other materials to really give it a good hard punch. People taking nicotinic all by itself have run longer and unnecessarily arduously. But that's all right. We're all victims of the same cause. What do we got to lose? If we didn't pursue this, of course, we'd all be dead anyhow. You know, that'd be that. The only thing we got to lose is the mock-up in Earth. All right, so we look along this line, and we discover then, what do we do? What do we do with all this information when we've got it? When we know the dosages, when they're exact, when they're right down to the smallest milligram. We'll get scientific about this. Probably won't get anywhere near the good results. Probably be weighing the fellow and figuring how many milligrams of this and that per kilo. I can see somebody up the track 100 years from now measuring these things with this type of assay balance, you know, that measures 1/1000th of a milligram or something. It's even enclosed in glass so the air won't tilt it, you know. Measuring it carefully so as to get the exact dosage it says in the handbook. You know? Anyhow, we'll take handfuls of this stuff and throw it into people and see what happens. And when we've done that, we will, of course, issue a very complicated manual on the subject, which will befuddle anybody. Most complicated manual. It would be the care and treatment of radiation. And it'll just have a whole bunch of stuff on a page. When you get to the bottom of that page, and it says, and see your local auditor, and then we get a whole bunch of stuff on the next page, and at the bottom of that page, and an asterisk, this time it says, see your local auditor, and on the next page, we'll very complicated on that page, unpronounceable. By that time, we get the pyrobenzoaminophylline content of the dianazine is the primary booster which takes care of strontium buff-woof 90 and a half. A very little known element. And we get to the bottom. We get to the bottom of that page and it says, by all means, see your local auditor and pay the bill too. Anyway, we'll have a manual on the subject. But the point is, it does require auditing along with it. I don't think anybody could clear himself up all the way along the line without some auditing. It doesn't seem reasonable, since bodies never have in the past. Our stable data to this date is that bodies left to their own devices don't fare too well in auditing. We have run people on freewheeling for 5 years without running them clear. Actually, there is a case on record of somebody running for 5 years on freewheeling on guck. You didn't know that, did you? He isn't clear yet. Feels fine. He never felt better, but he isn't clear. Got a very good report on it the other day. So there is a mental assist necessary, so that requires, besides dianazine, an intensive. Well, the fact that there are only about 300 auditors who are real active and on the ball in the eastern United States, and there's about, let's see, that's a million, no, that's only about 100,000 pre-clears per auditor. I think that's pretty good. I think we have some possibility of doing some part of this job if we can possibly do it. Well, there may be a lot of things wrong with our plans, but there's nothing wrong with our intention. And I hope you will agree with me that it's a pretty good intention to keep the